Does it scare me? Yes.
Yeah.
Should I do it then? Hell yes. Yes.
I really think this sums up my guest Emily Akner's approach to life. Firstly, welcome to episode 2 of the Live Beyond podcast. This podcast is about people who step outside of their comfort zones to achieve some pretty amazing things, and I think really achieve their potential. It's people who inspire me and will hopefully inspire others, and I'm really excited to introduce my first interview. It's a chat with my friend Emily Akner, who I think really embodies the concept of Live Beyond. At the time of recording, about a couple of weeks ago, she just completed a pretty epic 300-mile run around the coast of Cornwall in the southwest of England. I talked to Emily about a number of things, from the role that sport has played in her life to her recent career change to become a personal trainer, and then obviously this amazing 300-mile run. So I hope you get a sense of who she is, and really what drives her and motivates her to push beyond her own personal limits. I really hope you enjoy it. So here we go. Hi Emily, thanks for joining.
Hiya, how you doing?
Really happy that you're here. Just as a really quick intro, so Emily and I have known each other probably a couple of years now, I think.
Yeah.
We met at our running crew, which is called Run Dem Crew in London. And I've just watched Emily go on this amazing journey over the last couple of years, which has kind of culminated in a recent project of running a grand total of 300 miles around the coast of Cornwall. Amazing.
Thank you. Survived.
Yay. Which finished a week ago today, actually. So I guess let's start with how you're feeling.
I guess I haven't quite taken it all in. Sort of coming back to London, you just jump straight back into London life. So I got back to London on Monday night, and yeah, I've been swimming a couple of times, been in the gym this morning. So I think physically I'm taking it relatively easily, but at the same time looking forward to keeping the momentum going and, you know, giving the body a bit of a rest, but just enjoying the strength that I've still got, hopefully.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty amazing, because it's definitely not for the faint-hearted. There's some just a bit of elevation on those 300 miles.
A wee bit, yeah. Before I got started, I was in contact with the South West Coast Path, and just to find out how much the total elevation was, and they told me it was 55,000 feet. Just for the Cornish, I mean, for the Cornish section, the whole South West Coast Path is 630 miles in total, but that goes from Somerset all the way around to Dorset. But I just did the Devon to Devon
just
section, the 300 mile section of the 630. Yeah.
And
yeah.
How long did it take?
I did it in 12 days.
That's pretty amazing. Yeah. So we'll come back to that, because I really want to know more about preparation, how it went, your thoughts on kind of highs and lows, because I'm sure there were both probably during the challenge. But I think it'd be really helpful to start with kind of, I suppose, where you grew up, because I know that there's a kind of link to Cornwall, and that's sort of some of the backstory to the challenge itself. And whether you're into sport, sort of what part sports played in your life, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly that. I mean, I'm from Falmouth in Cornwall, so I grew up there. Only moved to London sort of 5 years ago, having previously lived in the mountains in Switzerland for 3 years as well. So I think I've always been sort of hopped from outdoor-centric places to outdoor-centric places, and as I grew up, yeah, absolutely. I started playing sport from the get-go. I was into, played a load of netball. Actually played like touch rugby when I was much younger. And everything, running around, football, hockey, all the usual kind of sports you play when you're a kid and get involved in. But running was something I started doing probably at the age of about 11. Yeah,
oh, since really?
I started secondary school. Yeah.
So you've always been a runner?
Yeah, I did a lot of cross country running.
Hardcore.
Yeah, for some reason that was my chosen club. kind of go to school and don't think you're going to gravitate towards the cross country club. But I did, and yeah, loved and hated that for 3 years, and then decided to kind of move on. And yeah, probably bar athletics up until the age of 15, probably stopped running for a good part of 10 years, I'd say.
Okay.
And so again, became kind of part of my lifestyle when I was living out in Switzerland in the summers. But it's only since moving back to London that I've kind of really, yeah, got back into it, I'd say.
Cool, because I think you've done a lot of snowboarding as well, haven't you?
Yeah, that was, one of the things I knew from quite a young age is that, well, I was very lucky to spend time in the mountains in the winter when I was younger, and knew that I wanted to be a chalet girl as soon as I had the first opportunity to kind of hang out for 5 months in the winter. So when I was just before heading off to uni, I went and did a season, winter season. And then as soon as between uni, I was out as much as possible. I was in social secretary of the snow sports club and kind of took part in a lot of the uni competitions, kind of started competing out there. And then when I had a year abroad, I actually went and studied in Grenoble because of the proximity to the mountains.
I'm going to study, but
spent my weekends and my weekdays hanging out there, and then moved to Switzerland when I was 22.
Okay.
And then started, prior to that, did my Basie level 3 instructors,
snowboard instructors.
So started teaching when I was living out in Switzerland. Yeah.
How fantastic. Yeah. And I suppose what's interesting, because I get the kind of outdoors aspect, like all of the sports I think that you've been involved in are massively kind of outdoors, but I'm also interested in the challenge aspect of things. So obviously the most recent project was a huge challenge in itself, but I suppose what's always been the driver around the sport, I mean, has it been the challenge or has it been kind of the freedom or a mixture?
I think it's a lot of it is to do with the process of actually getting to the point where you realise you can achieve a goal that you, in your heart, you know you can do, but your head might be kind of, it's that head-heart battle of, I can definitely do this, but knowing the physical pain that you're probably going to have to get through to get there, it's that balance, and driving factor is probably the process and kind of knowing that you can grow and you'll learn some things along the way. I think that's always
yeah, exactly. It's that comfort zone thing. It's like, this is a bit uncomfortable.
And there's an element of actually just wanting to perhaps push those limits and maybe kind of do more than other people think you're possibly capable of doing.
And more than you think you're capable of doing.
Questioning that. Pushing those boundaries.
I think that's really cool, and I'm sure a lot of I definitely relate to it, because I think it's only by putting yourself outside that you do grow. You can kind of bumble along quite happily, or maybe not happily. I think it depends what type of person you are, but maybe there's this feeling that there's more that you can achieve as an individual, and then sort of how you get there and
where you go from there, more to the point, is if you get there, then what do you do?
Come up with something else.
It's an interesting thing. I think you're constantly, if you're that way inclined as a person, one of the first things that people tend to ask you after you've done something is what's next.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you found that after your big run, but one of the same, what's next? And I'm like, currently, like right now, I'm sort of thinking of maybe relaxing for a bit, but I think if you do sort of set yourself on that path, then maybe it's something to do with momentum, but you do look for the next thing, whether it's an adrenaline or a personal growth or actually just to keep that sort of stability and sort of that mental stability of knowing that having that in the future, that challenge in the future is what you look for as a goal, is how you benchmark your state of well-being based on kind of what you're working towards.
Yeah, and I don't know whether you find it, but there's a sense of kind of folk. I find if I don't have goals, I'm a bit kind of all over the place.
Yeah.
And if I can have something... Actually, and if I have something to focus on as a project, everything else becomes a bit clearer as well.
Definitely.
I think people have different experiences.
It's like a channel, I see.
Yeah, so where to direct your energy, isn't it? Okay, so 3 years... snowboarding, essentially, is that right, in Switzerland?
Yeah.
And doing other things,
mountain biking, running.
Not just snowboarding, can't do that all year long.
Yeah. Well, yeah, no, there was no glacier where I was, so unfortunately I couldn't do it in the summers, but yeah.
And then what?
Again, decided that I needed a new focus, I think. Wasn't that I fell out of love with snowboarding or the mountains. I think maybe just a realisation that where I was at potentially had plateaued and had never really given myself an opportunity to grow professionally and explore other avenues. I'm very interested in the arts and sort of more of creative side, and actually decided to study interior design. So.
Okay.
Did a little bit of that out there, sort of correspondence course based.
Oh, interesting.
And that then led me to considering moving back to the UK, and so picked up that thing, moved to London, been working, and then started working in furniture.
Okay.
So yeah, that was sort of an organic move towards coming back to the UK. Really, it was a. I didn't really know where it was going to go. I'd never thought about living in London before. Never had any interest to live in a city.
Okay.
But again, in my mind, that was a bigger challenge than potentially staying out.
Right, okay.
In the mountains and doing something along the same lines that I'd been doing.
So Switzerland was after university?
Yeah.
Which was in Exeter?
Yeah, exactly. Southwest, yeah.
Nice. Yeah, exactly.
A bit far afield, yeah.
Although Switzerland's a bit, yeah. So there's definitely been some moving around.
Yeah.
And I suppose, yeah, so how long were you in furniture for?
Up until last year, so it's
okay.
good four years.
So it was sort of furniture,
yeah, furniture
marketing.
Moved from sales to management, then to product development, and
oh, interesting.
And then, yeah, back to the kind of sales marketing side. So always... kind of done it a few different professional areas.
No, but I think the great thing now is that everybody has the ability to kind of transform themselves,
yeah.
And have a number of careers, different careers throughout their life. So I suppose London running started again, presumably,
yeah,
during
absolutely.
This time.
I think there's a thing. London is one of those places that you don't know how it's going to treat you. I had no idea how I was going to feel living in London. I quickly realised that, especially in East London and Hackney, it was amazing. There was so much going on.
Yeah.
But I didn't have a particularly big group of friends or people. Mm. So there's always going to be those times where you're by yourself. And
quite
everyone,
a lonely place.
Yeah.
Big cities. I think every big city, actually.
Exactly.
So much going on, but it's so weird that you find yourself sometimes thinking, oh...
Yeah.
Feel a bit lonely. How can I possibly feel lonely here?
Yeah, so I guess that's where the running came in. It was an antidote to any form of loneliness when there was sort of that sense of I'm at a loose end.
Yeah.
I don't want to go to the pub. I don't want to go and sort of be by myself at home, but I want to do something. Running was an obvious choice, and actually kind of got my arm twisted into running a marathon pretty early on before even really doing a 10K.
Nice. I like
one of those typical
goals and focus. I'm just gonna go for it. Good on you.
Yeah, so I had that in my mind. Had Paris Marathon set for, I think it was 2011. Yeah, 2011 was my first. Yeah, so just had something to aim for and kept sort of chipping away at that. And yeah, this is before I discovered my running people, my Run-Dem crew.
Okay.
Yeah, they came into it later on.
I guess the nice thing, I don't know whether you found it, but I know when I got into kind of training for longer distances, is that actually it just gives you the ability to explore.
Mm, totally, yeah.
And people think, oh God, I've got this 20-mile run this afternoon.
Oh,
this,
like, this where can I go?
Yeah. And actually, it kind of opens up. And then you kind of think, oh, I've never seen that street before. I'll go down there. And it's like this whole little journey that you explore your city in a different way.
Gives you a really good perception of space as well and distance.
Yes, true.
That's one thing I've always struggled with, is trying to work out like how far something is from somewhere else.
Yeah.
So that was great, yeah. But you're so right. I think it's a sort of same thing with cycling, really. I mean, doing London by bike as a form of public transport is essential, I feel, to learning your city and exploring. Running at the weekends and going and, like you say.
So when did you meet your people?
When did the Run-Dem crew? I met them in April, just before, it might be the end of March, just before I went away to Paris to run the marathon. It was West, so I joined the Paddington Rec crew, and Corey and Ellie were there and with open arms, which is amazing. Me and my good friend Emily, we went along again. We were just looking for a running, inverted commas, club. And Emily introduced Run-Dem. And so we went along, and it was just a bit of a shock. It was like, what is this? This is amazing. Then I went away for a while, and then I came back, and everyone always describes this post or the post marathon blues. I think they hit me pretty bad.
Okay.
So I had some time that I bimbled around for a while, and then got myself back to Paddington Rec on a Monday night, then entered again not long after that a 10 miler in Surrey randomly.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was a really nice race. It was kind of hilly, but it was great fun, and suddenly it was like, oh, I'm back. Yeah.
Oh, nice. So nice when you had that moment.
Yeah, it felt really good.
Because the old running mojo does go up and down.
Absolutely.
Depending on a lot of things, actually.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think as quickly as you can recognise that happens and it's part of the process and the joy of running, the easier it becomes and the quicker you can get back into that, into your flow. So, yeah. And then thereafter I shortly joined the guys over in Shoreditch and East, and it's been a lovely long friendship ever since.
I suppose there's a bit of background. So Run-Dem crew, I think I mentioned in the last episode, is a running crew in London, and is an amazing sort of family and community of people. But there are these two. So there's a group in East London and a group in West London, which Emily was just describing. But just an amazing community that was created by a chap called Charlie Dark, who's definitely worth looking into. There's a TED Talk out there if anybody's interested. I'll put them in the show notes as well. So I think we're gradually inching towards kind of the last couple of years and the journey that you've been on. So I know I'm going to let you talk about it, but I know there's been some quite significant changes in terms of your professional life that's kind of led on to other things. So it'd just be really interesting to hear kind of what you've been through and what led to those changes.
I mean, I think this whole year, I mean, you and I have spoken about it before, it's been an interesting one. Probably about this time last year, I was made redundant, and it was that moment that I think if anyone's been through it, it sort of makes you feel a bit sick to the stomach. But at the same time, I sat opposite from my then boss and had this kind of boiling blood feeling. But at the same time, my heart was just fluttered. It was this sort of sense of, is this it? Is this my chance to kind of do something by myself and go out? And I'd been thinking it, the idea was there. It was sort of bubbling away about how I really needed to kind of push myself and try a different direction because I hadn't been super happy for a little while. So yeah, I just took it. I took that opportunity and decided that I wasn't going to go back to my standard sort of Monday to Friday 9 to 5. Didn't want a full-time contract and didn't want to stay in the necessarily didn't know that I didn't want to stay in the furniture industry then, but I had an idea that perhaps it would require a little bit of change of tack. So yeah, just kind of made a decision to not choose normal. I'm not sure if that's the right way to put it, but to push myself and start putting my hand up for things that I had previously I'd maybe thought might happen to me one day, but I just took more of a proactive approach, I guess, to finding a new source of something.
I think that's really amazing, because it's quite, you know, because those kinds of things can affect your confidence,
yeah,
in quite a profound way.
Mm.
And can, I suppose, can make you kind of go inwards.
Mm.
But it sounds like you did the opposite, which personally I think is really admirable.
Mm,
and sounds like a really positive way of dealing with them. I suppose it depends how philosophical you are about these things as well. It does sound a bit silly sometimes, but I genuinely do think things happen for a reason.
Mm.
Even if terrible things have happened to you, and some things it's really difficult to justify, but something like that,
mm,
I think it sounds like your approach was the right one, clearly.
Yeah.
But I suppose after that, how did you get into doing what you're doing now?
Yeah.
Because I know that you've recently qualified as a personal trainer, and obviously there's been this challenge, but I know, and I think you mentioned to me, and I think you just said, sort of, you didn't really know what you were going to do. So there's that kind of period of flux, and then
yeah,
how do
absolutely.
You then find direction?
How do you get there?
Yeah.
I think it was, looking back, I guess it's a slightly a retrospective spider's web of different opportunities, and I dabbled in working in events, and I love writing, so I sort of tried my hand at some copywriting.
Really good writer.
Thank you.
I love your writing.
Thank you. But this is one of these things that I'd always had on my tick list of things to give a go, like get an article published, get a sort of start a blog.
Yeah.
All of these things that you have in your mind that I will do one day. And I had some time. I was like, got to do it.
Yeah.
So I did it. And then actually thought, how can you pull all these different strands of your life together to make this, to kind of make a new life? And actually, again, had a conversation with Corey in December, Corey from Rundem, and
yeah,
and he mentioned about this personal training potential journey that he was going on, and that got me to thinking of why have I never really considered this before. With a background in teaching anyway, so snowboarding and...
True.
And my love for kind of hanging out in the gym and
yeah,
running and just being active. And if you actually kind of break it down to what makes you happy on a day-to-day basis, moving was my thing.
Okay.
So, yeah, I actually had some time out in February when I decided to... Well, I moved house and then decided to go again, this random opportunity to go to India. So did the Eat Pro Love thing and went to India. But found myself working at a surf yoga retreat in the south,
okay,
Solomon Surf, which was again amazing opportunity to be there for 2 months and surfed as much as possible, did loads of yoga,
so cool.
It's enough time to kind of
I do want to know how to surf. I think I told you,
yeah,
I did try recently and it was fun,
yeah,
but there wasn't so much standing on the board.
Well,
as being
in
the water.
That's a whole other kettle of fish.
But Emily is amazing at surfing, quite clearly.
It's
but just
a passion, yeah.
Also, I think, I hope you don't mind me saying it, but
okay,
I remember when we spoke, I don't know whether it was before or after you went to India, actually. But
mm,
I think you were starting to meditate a bit as well and sort of just do kind of 10 minutes a day.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether that's something that's continued or whether it was helpful. Because I know personally it's something that I've tried to get into and I really can see the benefits, but
mm,
I do sort of struggle to integrate it into my kind of daily life.
Yeah. I think this... I guess the whole concept of mindfulness, I know there's been a big movement of this in the last 5, probably 10 years,
mm,
especially in the last sort of few years,
yeah,
that was something I kind of started to kind of comprehend before I left Switzerland. All that pilot of sort of social psychology and
yeah,
kind of looking at behaviours and this idea of your actions are a result of your thoughts. And there's this concept that, you know, really to move towards a better, stronger self, you know, you're the one that you take control of these actions, you take control of these thoughts, which results in the positive actions. So yeah, I guess meditation was something that was, yeah, super new. Actually, that brings me back to an event in November that was, again, quite a big sort of turning point for me, just for the people I met and the amazing speakers and the concepts. And it's called, it was a technology and wellbeing event called Hacking Happiness. Hacking Happiness.
Oh, okay.
So a really interesting, loads of interesting ideas. I mean, the guy from Headspace was there. He did of the talks. So that was super fascinating to listen to him. And that teamed with some kind of ideas of, you know, what you can do to this purpose, looking for purpose-driven work.
Okay.
Again, there's an amazing guy called Smiley, who's based out in San Francisco, who just a really good approach to how you're kind of looking for that thing in life, looking for your thing, for your niche, or maybe be it the profession or the hobby or the challenge that typifies you and that embodies what you're about.
Exactly.
And so I guess that very much got the ball rolling, and then led on to this whole idea of, yeah, you know, when in India, learn to meditate. Yeah. that actually didn't really go to plan, I don't think. I learned to juggle. That was cool.
just another area of my brain.
Learned to juggle, which I guess is a form of meditation.
What did you do in India? I learned to juggle. Oh, okay, cool. Nice.
Didn't master the slack line, unfortunately. But, yeah, I guess yin yoga was something I was introduced to, which is kind of a form of crossover between meditation and yoga, in the sense that it's very slow, I guess restorative, and about time to think, and because you're in those postures for a quite a long time, maybe 5 minutes you stay in the same posture.
Oh really? I don't know.
It's really it's quite challenging from a psychological point of view than a physical, because physical as well, as the sense that, you know, when your joints and everything's screaming at you, then your mind kicks in and you have to really force yourself to kind of weather the storm as such. So that's probably as far as I got with my meditation in India, so that didn't go so well. But it's just nice to keep it on the radar. I definitely do sort of tap into it as much as possible. I know there's the irony of the link now between meditation and technology.
True.
And how the predominant form of platform is via our mobile phones.
Which is what we're trying to get away from
and have a moment. But, you know, if that kind of encourages more people to take some time for themselves and to switch off, then great.
Definitely. So how long were you in India for?
It's just under 2 months, so just
okay, so quite a while.
Weeks, yeah.
And then presumably, well, you came back to London.
Came back to London. I had an idea before I went away, really pretty strong idea that's what I wanted to pursue, the personal training
route.
I've been training for coming up to 3 years, amazing gym in Hackney called Barber's Gym, and my good friend Darren, who runs it, had been very encouraging of me sort of taking that path. So that was something that was in my mind, but I hadn't committed to anything. So I actually met some amazing women when I was out in India who were doing in that line of work, yoga teachers, personal trainers from all over the world. This incredible lady from Colorado, the amazing from Brazil. It's just really cool, very strong but sorted women who were just doing that and loving it. And it was a nice thing to kind of have to meet those people
at the right time,
converse with them, and just get their inspiration, hear their stories. And so I went back, and I think the next day actually committed to a course, and started the following month, did the pre-work and got in the gym for best part of 12 weeks, really.
That's we'll come on to it actually, because I think what's really what's kind of special about you and your experience is that you've been involved in so many different types of sport, and then it kind of comes together. And I think probably in terms of the people you work with, everyone will have different goals.
Yeah.
But I think you can probably relate in some way personally,
I hope so, yeah,
given the different things that you've done.
Mm.
So when did you complete the course?
Final exam was on the 22nd of August, so...
Yeah, I remember. So
yeah,
cool.
That was nerve-wracking. It was one of those things I think you go into, or I went into, not really sure if I was going to nail it or not, really. I had a fantastic training partner who's become a good friend, and him and I were both... Yeah, we were definitely... we were strong. We got on really well, and we really were passionate about doing the course well, and so hopefully that showed, and they liked us.
Well, congratulations for passing, and yeah, really, really exciting. And I think what's really nice about that, given that you were kind of a bit nervous, is these things in life where you're sort of excited because you know that that's where you want to go,
yeah,
but nervous at the same time because, again, it's
what you
want to
do. You can't fail, can you?
Exactly.
You don't have an option.
Yeah.
There's nothing left.
But you're putting out there... I think the thing is that you're putting yourself out there and there's the possibility of failure.
Mm.
And that's... But that's what sort of drives you to make sure that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
And I think... I don't know. I personally, I find that it's the things that I'm excited about and nervous about are the things that sort of are my opportunities for growth.
Yeah.
And it's that combination of emotion. So when did you have the idea of running around Cornwall then?
When I was away, I think I probably already knew, like really deep down, that before I went to India that I was wanted to do something similar. But it was only, I actually did quite a lot of running out there. And again, maybe it comes back to what I said about London being lonely. When I first arrived in India, I was by myself, and I spent 10 days totally by myself, but in one place, and just to try and find my feet, I literally did that. I just went out super early in the morning to run, and that was lovely, and I felt really safe. It was really exciting. Everything was new.
Yeah.
It was just this renewed sense of vigour for outdoors and for, you know, the path, and the ground is dusty and rocky and rooty, and everything is just on alert.
Smell and yeah. See the picture.
I actually had an accident on my third run, because I had to do a section. I was running down quite a busy road, but on the sort of dirt path, and then to jump up onto the road, that there was no real kind of graduation in the tarmac, so I caught my foot on the jagged bit of the road and sprawled out onto this main tarmac road. Yeah, and caught my knee and really took a big chunk out of my knee.
Oh, no.
It was a bit scary, but again, yeah. It's all part of the part of the journey.
I've got a lovely
scar that remains, which is a nice reminder of my why I chose to run in India. And but yeah, and then actually when I moved down to the coast, there was a lovely journey to get to a spot where we surfed at quite a lot.
Okay.
I'd go and drop my boards off with the guys in the morning, and then I'd run up the coast. It was about a 4.5-5 mile run to the surf spot. So I'd meet them there and then go for a surf. And it was just this, it felt like this kind of the yellow brick road, really. It was a beautiful red brick path that just led from where I was living at the time to this surf spot, and just wound around the coastline, and just passed some lovely sights, past these fishermen pulling in the fish, and I stopped and helped them, and there's some guys like playing cards on the side, and you know, just lovely little interactions you have with people along the way. And I then kind of guessed when I went back home, I was like, I've got this at home, I've got Cornwall,
yeah.
I've got this, found out about the Southwest Coast Path, and realised that it was just a continual path all the way around, unbroken. Just kind of thought that I could probably emulate that same feeling that I had out in India, but, you know, on proper home turf. And I don't know the whole of Cornwall, I didn't know the whole of Cornwall, like every sort of square inch of coastline and such. I mean, I don't think many people can say they do. Even if you are Cornish, I think you you probably don't appreciate how much you have there to explore. And so It was wanting to go and, yeah, to really take advantage of a beautiful home that I have, especially living in London. You really crave that space. And when I used to go back, I always go to the same spots. I go to Porthtown and Cadrevi, nice. And I used to go for a surf, and I'm from Falmouth, so I hang out in Falmouth with my friends. And so, yeah, it's that sort of, I have like a pretty set triangulation of the spots that I do in Cornwall. So, yeah, kind of just wanted to explore.
So you really got to discover. So, because it didn't seem like that long, kind of you had the idea and then you started, what was it, the 3rd of...
4th of October.
4th of October.
Yeah.
So I suppose how long did you have in the run-up, training? And then I remember there was like a nervousness of kind of putting it out there that you were going to do it, because I think that is utterly terrifying, because then you're sort of accountable.
I think that's it. I think that was more, if it felt like a short amount of time, it was probably because I kept it under wraps for quite a long time. I don't know why that was, because it wasn't as though it was anything that I was, not ashamed of or just not wanting to share. It was just, it was such a big thing. The same reason I find it hard to articulate exactly what it was, that the reasons why I did it.
Yeah.
I was maybe just nervous that I couldn't tell people what it was I was doing or why I was doing it. It was just a sense of something I really had to do. And so I did keep it to myself a little bit, probably as much while I formulated sort of the logistics in my head, because I had to really think about lots of different things. And I'm not really very good at asking for help, admittedly. So it's something I kind of took on my shoulders to sort of figure out myself. And I did. And then I feel once I had my massive spreadsheet of where I was going to be going on a daily basis and what I needed, then I could be a little bit more vocal about it and know that I was going to definitely go ahead with it.
Yeah, and I suppose when you know when you're going to do it as well, when you have
a date.
Yeah.
I initially set it for September. I wanted to do it in September, firstly, but I was still kind of full on with the course at the time.
Okay.
I'd actually found there was a lot of work to do outside of the gym, outside of the classroom, and I just wasn't getting enough time for training, and that was making me really nervous. And the charity aspect as well, I didn't feel I'd put enough, I wasn't allowing myself enough time to think about fundraising and really, because I thought, obviously the more time you have for that, the more energy you can put into that, and that is the cause, that is a great cause, and one of the another reasons why I thought it's a good thing to do a big challenge and support those guys.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'm all in her shoes.
Sorry, I don't know, I sort of spoke over you. So the charity was called...
Charity is A Mile in Her Shoes, who
what,
I am.
What do they do?
They are a London-based charity, very small, volunteer-led group who work with homeless shelters across the London area to get women into running who have been affected by homelessness or are currently still affected by homelessness. And they reach out to these shelters to try and organise running groups that invite as many people along, as many women along as want to join. And it's a way of re-socialising them and allowing them an opportunity to regain a sense of self.
And confidence.
Through moving.
Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, we all know how important running is to our sense of identity and well-being. So especially if you've been through such a horrendous journey like these women have. They do really amazing work. So I'm really stoked to have raised a little bit.
Done really well. And is it still open, the
absolutely.
Page?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. It's still
I'll
there.
I'll definitely put that in the show notes.
Yeah,
as
we're
well.
Up to 2,000 with gift aid, 2,200.
Awesome. I'm sure that'll make an amazing difference.
I hope so, yeah, I do.
I know of them a little bit and have been really interested in their work. I think a lot of us have been through tough times and running has been a sort of method of coping.
Mm.
Probably not tough times compared to, sorry, I'm not comparing, but, you know, there's
it's,
like different
it's all
levels.
It's relative.
Of,
We've
yeah,
all got
exactly.
a different reality, isn't it?
But so I suppose, because I know we spoke about your training, and I think often when you think of challenges like this, you're like, okay, well, obviously you have to do lots of running beforehand.
Mm. Yeah.
But I think you had quite a balanced approach to your training, and I know you're really interested in strength work, and I just wondered, how that helped and what types of training you did to prepare. Yeah.
I think that's it, because it was such a new and different challenge.
Yeah.
Like, I have run marathons before, and I think there's a lot of literature out there to kind of support you through your marathon journey. Whereas I think multi-stage events, there's not as much sort of prolific stuff. So I kind of took on my own approach, in the sense that running is pretty standard, just kept on increasing the mileage. But actually, really the main thing was looking at the strength work, keeping my body conditioned, in the sense that I was doing a load of yoga, stretching, flexibility, mobility, really important. Again, trying to kind of go back to basics, and this idea of, trying to keep the body well oiled, and looking at the smaller joints, the feet, the ankle, from there, obviously, hill training.
Yeah.
It was going to be unlike anything I'd ever done before.
Yeah.
So just trying to do back-to-back long runs. I admittedly never actually got up to more than sort of the mileage that I was going to be doing. So I wasn't going to be doing... I didn't do 30 miles and then 30 miles.
Yeah, okay.
I was definitely kind of... because I wanted the body to stay intact, especially kind of closer to the time. But yeah, the long run was standard, like the weekly long run that would definitely get done, and everything in between was I swim as well, so it's just a swimming, strength training, mobility, obviously the long run, and hill training.
Interesting, because I think a lot of us probably neglect the strength aspect of things. I know
it's so important.
Do. Yeah, so exactly. Because I think it helps you build in that endurance as
Absolutely.
Well, doesn't it?
And it's a psychological thing. I think that strength training, you get real satisfaction out of, lifting heavy things.
Yeah.
It's like, I can deadlift my body weight. That's great. Like, that's a nice thing to aim for. It's a really tangible goal for a lot of people that... Especially, I think it's dispelling this myth as women, you're going to bulk up or build muscle in places you don't want to, and become manly and masculine. And actually, it's very, very hard to kind of bulk up to the extent that people believe, that some weight lifters and bodybuilders aspire to. That's not going to happen, like, by strength training twice a week. Good on you if you can manage.
Exactly. How much protein can you take?
Definitely. It's more about it's about diet, it's about nutrition, that comes into it big time. It's satisfying. It's a great thing. And I mean, as I said, the gym that I'm based at and now working at is there's a really fantastic community of people who are, just great to be around and inspiring. It's an important thing to get in.
Interesting. And so, I suppose during the training aspect, were there times when you thought, oh God, am I putting enough training in?
Yeah.
Am I going to be able
Definitely.
To do this?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's part of the journey. It's sort of, if you're not questioning if you're doing enough, if you're resting on your laurels, being like, yeah, I'm fine, no worries, I got this, then yeah, good luck to you. No, it's checking that, it's keeping that in check, and not allowing those negative thoughts to take you into an unrealistic place, because you need to use those to kind of fuel your desire to keep training. I think that's really important. Coming back to that fear, I think fear, borderline, anxiety, they're different things. And I think anxiety is what you have to watch out for. And certainly I have experienced in the past, and very familiar with that emotion now. And it's not panicking when it starts to arrive, because I think as soon as you panic and try to kind of push it away, that's when it takes hold really pretty strongly. So it's allowing that to arrive, recognize it, but let it pass and realize it's a temporary thing. Because you've exactly that, you've got this. You've got to really believe that you've got it. If I wouldn't have got to the my imaginary start line if I didn't believe I could do this.
Well, it wasn't imaginary, but the actual yeah,
it was actually. It was in a car park in the middle of nowhere.
Okay,
so I had to run into my start line, which is the Cornish Devonport. So I think I've got a photo, a selfie by the sign that says Cornwall/Kerno.
Yeah, no, it's true.
I'll put that up at some point to prove that I actually was at that start line. I did have my tracker though; that was quite useful.
Yeah,
I don't know if you followed.
I did
at all on
absolutely.
That. But that was a really good bit of kit, which that was one of my slight anxieties was the navigational aspect, and just people knowing or sort of from a safety point of view knowing where I was, because I was out by myself
exactly
all day. So and as safe as it is and as well maintained as the path is, I didn't know what the weather was going to be like. I mean, I actually considered, I was like, what do I do if lightning strikes the sea? Luckily that didn't happen, but, you know, very real possibilities. And then, so yeah, this tracker, it's called Spot. It's a really good bit of kit. Just had that on me at all times. There's one day I think I forgot to turn it on in the morning, which was annoying. And then another day I forgot to turn it off because I was so tired. So that kind of zipped across Cornwall.
Yeah. Like straight lines. Yeah. Wow.
But no, it was cool. It sends a signal every 10 minutes and just logs your coordinates, which is then translated onto sort of your either a phone app or a website. So,
yeah, I mean, I was definitely following you throughout the journey. And like at work, every now and then I'd be like, oh, I wonder where Emily is. So it was quite a nice little distraction.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think what you said earlier is so key. It's like, I think we have a tendency to aim for perfection.
Absolutely.
All the time.
Yeah.
And inevitably things don't always go to plan. I think particularly with regards to training and things, especially, you know, even if you're training for like a 5k, which is a big challenge, you know, in itself, and depending on what you're kind of aiming for, I think it's really easy when you have a bad training session to be so hard on yourself.
Yeah.
But I think it's what you say, it's kind of just sort of compartmentalizing it. Okay, well, things don't always go to plan, let's get back on the bandwagon tomorrow.
Yeah.
and move forward in a positive way. So I think that's a really, really nice message.
Mm.
So 4th of October arrives.
Mm-hmm.
You're in the car park. How are you feeling?
Well, I'd woken up at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Ouch.
For a start, because I had to get up to Devon and I live in Falmouth. So I have to say, it was my support team was pretty much my mum.
Oh, bless her.
No, mum and dad from the ops, head of ops back home. no, so we drove every day to our different start points, and she was just an absolute diamond. She was amazing. So, but yeah, every morning I woke up, I felt pretty sick.
Like, really?
Just, yeah, a mixture of sort of nerves and kind of what I had ahead, and sometimes lack of sleep, didn't always sleep very well. But actually, on the actual start day, I guess I was excited. Obviously, the body felt good.
Okay,
hadn't
good.
Had any of the, like, no kind of aches or pains.
Right.
And then got to the car park, and it wasn't raining. That was another thought. It's like, yes, good. yeah, and the car park was in the middle of nowhere, and there was the first climb was just momentous already. I just looked up.
Wow.
And this big hill, like, I was like, oh, here we go. Yeah, off we go. But no, I was excited. Yeah, I think excited, nervous, a little bit of everything. Kind of couldn't see the end, couldn't see the finish line. No, could visualise a finish line, but
okay.
Couldn't see the finish line, as in.
But I think that's really interesting, because for some people, imagining, what I'm trying to get to is sort of what, because we'll get into it, but I'm interested in kind of what the highs and lows were.
Absolutely.
And what allows you to kind of push through those hard times. And I know that for some people, seeing the finish line in their head is a real motivator.
Yeah.
For me personally, I actually don't find that very helpful, because it's
neither.
So far away
that
I have to focus on the here and now and the every step. And just knowing that every step that I take gets me that little bit closer.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody works differently. So I just wondered kind of, what were your coping methods actually?
Yeah, that's a good question, yeah.
To get through it?
Yeah. I think that's it. It's just, I still haven't thought of it as a whole, as an entity. I think the every day, and when I looked at it, it wasn't a whole. It was a day. And then that day was little villages or miles. So the great thing is that I tried to Before I got started, like in weeks before preparation, I'd break down the miles into sort of little chunks of three, four. So okay. I could see the points that I wanted to get to, be it a beach or a village or a point of interest or a heritage site or something like this that I could look forward to, be it something I'd see or, you know, I'd stop for a cup of coffee there or I've heard they do a great kind of ice cream or just silly things like this. Got not that I fueled past. I didn't actually have one ice cream.
Really?
No. Oh, pasty, yes. But so that was, I mean, that was my plan before I got going. And then obviously you don't, I didn't allow myself to think too much about if things failed, what I would do. Because I thought too much would then kind of be carried with me. But I did have, admittedly, a very challenging first couple of days, because firstly the shock of the terrain. I mean, I was climbing 400 meters then plunging into a valley like 300 meters, then back up again and then back down and then back up and then back down, and I knew it was going to be hard, but it was it was really severe. And and it was, it's kind of, it's very remote, that area of Cornwall was very remote, and didn't pass anyone. The weather was a bit grey. It wasn't raining, as I said, but it was grey, and it was a bit chilly, and just all of these different aspects. Which the land is itself is historically is quite sacred. There's a lot of history in that area of Cornwall and sort of Druidry, and I've often thought that actually potentially it kind of reflects your mood at the time, so that it bounces off. So you kind of work in harmony with your surroundings. And so I was finding it tough, and the scenery, as beautiful and wild and rugged as it was, it kind of didn't help to lift me. But at the same time it was you know, so much to like concentrate and focus on, like not slipping, running like down that section, kind of walking up that section, scrambling up that section. So it's very much, as you say, one foot in front of the other. And I did struggle with like my IT band flared over my knee, which caused a little bit of ITBS, and that was tough. Like day two, I kind of got to the point. I generally tend to work with these things on a bit of a pain scale, and there's points that you can get to, and then there's points that you kind of think, okay, I need to start questioning my tactics here. And I got to that point on day two. Because there was, it was borderline not good pain. And so I had a little bit of a kind of a breakdown, if I'm honest. It was kind of, a few tears were shed, and around Tintagel, which, need to say, there's no castle in Tintagel. It's just ruins. that was interesting. But I managed to pull it together because, again, I, like you say, just thought, okay, I'm going to change my tactics. I can calibrate things. I can slow down. You just work towards actually just getting there and taking the expectations off myself. Was a very liberating feeling. I think you go out and do these things sometimes with high expectations, sometimes with no expectations. I didn't really go out with many expectations of how I'd kind of feel, but I knew I was gonna finish. Initially I wanted to finish in 10 days, which was 30 miles a day. But the sheer scale of those first climbs, I just hadn't quite realised. I think someone, a good friend of mine, said for every 100 metres of elevation climbed, they sort of effectively adding on a kilometre of distance. Which I,
for
I'm
your
not
body.
Sure.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly, for the body. And so that was when I then kind of factored that in. And that same friend, he texted me moment when I really needed it, and it kind of gave me some words of encouragement, and that comes back to the fact of, like you say, coping. How do you cope? It's the people. I think the support I had was just phenomenal, absolutely unbelievable, and I feel so proud to be friends and know the people that I know, because they were just my absolute saviours in really dark times and good times as well. So it wasn't just sort of resting on them or relying on them to kind of drag me up. It was that, it felt like I was sharing it with a lot of people, and the guys in Rundem especially yeah. were just, yeah, oh God, too much love.
Yeah,
too much love.
But I think that is amazing, and you totally deserve the support. I mean, you're putting yourself out there to do this pretty crazy challenge, really.
Yeah.
And people,
that word was bandied around quite a lot.
Crazy, yeah, you're in the loony bin category now. But yeah, I think people like to live vicariously in a way through other people's challenges.
That's nice. I hope that's kind of...
Yeah, it would be nice to think that perhaps it's...
No, I definitely think that. And it gives people something themselves to feel like they're supporting you through it as well, I think. But I'm really glad that you received that level of support and massively deserved. And then, you know, you obviously culminated in finishing it. But I think a lot of what you've said is just really helpful in life in general. So
applicable.
Yeah, like so many of the things that we try to do, I think we get so frightened of them because they're so big and overwhelming, and it's like standing at the bottom of Everest and looking at the top and just thinking, I don't think I can get there. So because of that, I don't think I'm going to start.
Yeah.
And what you were saying there in terms of your preparation and breaking every stage down into kind of basically manageable chunks.
Yeah. Eating the elephant.
Yeah.
Exactly. Can't eat an elephant whole, can you?
I prefer that to Everest. I'm going to use that.
Although I feel a bit sorry for the elephant.
I know, that's all animal rights.
Tricky.
WWF.
But yeah, so breaking things up, obviously massively applicable. And then also the flexibility aspect, because I know, yeah, when you started, you were kind of, I want to get this done in 10 days. And, you know, as you said, you know, things don't always go to plan, and the knees started flaring up and sort of having to change those expectations, which again can, I think, could just make you think, I don't want to do this now. Mm. It's not going to plan, so actually I'm not going to do it. But I think the fact that, you know, you were able to okay, so like mini breakdown, we all have that. We throw our little tantrum. And then afterwards we're actually like, okay, but actually no, I can do this, and how am I going to do it? And again, I just think that, you know, it just applies to everything, whether it be a work project or whatever. It's just about sort of changing your expectations. Yeah, and also, like you said, I think taking the pressure off, because probably once you'd sort of accepted that it wasn't going to be the 10... I mean, it was only 12 days, to be fair, so you weren't actually that far off.
Oh, it was the first two that suckered me, but yeah, no, we got better. We got stronger, actually. That was the...
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. So actually, let's go with that. So how the first 2 days massively challenging, and then so obviously there were another 10 days.
Yeah.
How? What were the? I suppose let's stay on the challenges. What were the main challenges through that? And then let's move on to highlights.
Well, I think again, slowly picking up the pace of after that sort of that second day, realizing that maybe I just had to slow down, and handle actually kind of my style of running kind of went out the window a little bit. I had this sort of weird sort of three-legged gallop down some hills.
You grew another leg.
But then,
that's how to cope with long distance running.
Yeah, I'm not sure professionally I'd necessarily advocate running through the kind of pain I initially did, but it was it was managing the inflammation initially. So because I realised quite quickly what it was, that luckily I sort of had some help from my dad, who knows his stuff on that. So I just got it strapped and sort of managed the inflammation there. And then, other than that, I think it's just once it's gaining confidence again.
Yeah.
So I had to, that made me nervous, because I suddenly thought, when I started to feel twinges, I suddenly thought, oh God, it's gonna, I'm gonna end up in this level of pain again. And I had to really check myself when I was, to kind of pull back and think, no, it's okay. And just to allow myself to kind of keep going on that. But slowly, and was just careful, but yeah, built up to the point that my final, I mean, I had some great friends who came down and joined me for a few miles, which
amazing.
Was lovely as well, because that was a real moment. I had a good friend, Amy, who joined me around Polzeth on day three, that was just lifted my spirits
Fantastic.
And it was quite flat, right, like for about a few months. So that was not for when she was running with me necessarily, but it was just a nice kind of combination of a little bit more softer terrain and having a good friend. And we just chatted about everything. We skateboard together, and we were just chatting about skating in London and Cornwall. And she's actually going off to travel in India as well.
Oh, really?
So we have loads to talk about. And I guess it's just taking your mind off it.
Yeah.
And so again, that came to the point that when I did start to feel tired or struggled like to get up hills or motivated to kind of keep pushing forwards, that reminded me to look to nice memories, to think about my family, think about my friends. The sea was such a constant source of inspiration. I mean, you can't fail to be kind of get energy from the sea, be it blowing a hoolie and it's sort of sea spray in your face or surfing. There were surfers and the swell hit when I was running, so there was an incredible swell coming in on the north coast, so I was just salivating at the waves as I was running around. But at the same time, I often find that there's this kind of I take a lot of energy from that, so that really kind of helped to keep me present and to allow me to enjoy the time, really.
Yeah, I'd have thought running 300 miles with a surfboard under your arm. Just added that slightly impossible level of challenge. Nothing is impossible, but so it sounds like connection to nature was one of the kind of highlights.
Yeah, definitely.
What were the other things that were? Because I don't know whether you found it, but I think with challenges like that, especially when they go over, you know, kind of multi-day and over a long period of time, the lows are actually quite low, I think, but also you have these highs that are kind of higher than usual.
Send your body chemicals into all sorts of, you get serotonin one day, you got like endorphins, like the whole, like, going on. What were the other highs? I think the best day I had, I'll sort of loosely describe it, was coming into Falmouth, I think around day eight, or maybe a bit after day 10, I think. And it was just beautiful. It was a lovely stretch from Coverack, which is, again, relatively soft terrain, through a quarry initially. And it was very early in the morning. Again, one of these beautiful sunrises. I was so lucky with the weather. And then found my way kind of winding through more wooded terrain into this beautiful creek area. And it was called Gillen Creek towards Flushing. And there, I wasn't sure what the tide was doing, but I sort of chanced it, knowing it was kind of relatively low. And it was probably about a foot of water passing through the creek at the time. So I wanted to kind of, the coastal path either takes you across the creek at low tide or round the creek.
Right.
Like, of course I'm going across the creek. I took my shoes and socks off and had a little paddle, and this was probably late morning, coming up to midday, just gorgeous. I felt like I had the whole place to myself, and it was, sat on the sand the other side for a little while, and then I found this swing, this old wooden swing, and I had a little swing by myself, and the whole thing, and then I set off again and made my way towards Helford Passage, and then kind of got the ferry across. But that whole day felt as though I was real. It was proper Famous Five stuff.
Brilliant.
Or Swallows and Amazons, one or the other. And really kind of felt like everything I found was a little treasure. It was, I came across this almost this wooden bird box filled with glass bottles that were all for sale, different colours and filled with shells. And I mean, these little things that you stumble upon, like, did someone put that there for me? There were some lovely little moments that day. So.
Oh, I just love the concept of adventure and discovery and exploring kind of areas.
Explore running.
Yes.
Nice word. I don't know if it's been coined before, but I enjoy that. I thought about it.
Oh, I like that. I think that's definitely a hashtag.
I used it.
And I guess freedom?
Yeah, absolutely. I think of an interesting... I thought a lot about my values when I was running and what's really important. And I mean, family and friends and people, that was massive. As I said before, touched on the support I got. So family and family and friends, and also, I mean, what I'm doing, it's all about fitness, it's mm-hmm. all about kind of the body and health, but freedom is been something that I've come to realise in this whole year, this last year, that is so crucial to my levels of happiness, is how yeah. free I feel. And I think whether it's necessarily, I'm not sure independence is, I think there's, again, two different things, but feeling free in this particular moment. I had a lot of focus over these 12 days, knowing where I had to get to, but it was purely my choice. Like, everything I was doing yeah. was totally my choice, and felt very in this good, happy headspace that was of my own doing. So
amazing. Yeah. And so, yeah, so, you know, day after day, kind of getting closer and closer. And then, I suppose, what was the last day like? Because there's so much energy gone mm-hmm. into the preparation, and then there's so much energy, obviously, during the 10, 11 days of running, and then you're on your last day, and it's yeah. kind of like, wow.
It was quite sad.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, strange, hey? Yeah, I know. I think if I was to describe, like, one emotion that I had that suddenly hit me like a wave was sadness, that it was coming to an end. And that was really unexpected. I thought I would feel elated, like yeah. really happy that I... But I reflected and felt very kind of proud of everything I'd done, and looking back at sort of the first couple of days and thinking, oh God, like remembering how I felt yeah. like waking up every morning. I think I had a little cry on my foam roller one morning because I hadn't had a lot of sleep, and it was just, I was rolling out my quads and it really hurt and my eyes were bad. I was like, oh, this is terrible. had a little teary moment. But so thinking back to those moments, and then kind of looking at the final day as well, as Rame Head was one of the final kind of memorable points, I think. So I kind of came around there, and it was beautiful, and there's a really lovely sort of almost 180 degree view of the bay, and there were like all the nice. Shetland ponies and the gorse and the colours, and but yeah, coming at again the final all of my technology pretty much died in the final few miles, so didn't have any phone.
Oh, no.
Didn't have my watch, the watch, no kind of idea of speed, and so I really didn't actually know where I was going in the last sort of few miles. So there was a sense of, oh, I think I'm going the right direction, I'm still got the sea on my right. Ended up in a wood, which was the last couple of miles into Cremel, which is the finish point opposite Plymouth. And there were squirrels everywhere.
So funny what you notice.
It's so funny. I love squirrels, so I'm always noticing squirrels anyway. I think they just make me laugh. And the nice thing, I thought it was like poetry in the fact that the Southwest Coast Path, the emblem is an acorn.
Okay.
So the whole way round, I was following an acorn, because there were times I didn't really know where I was going.
Yeah.
Sometimes carried a map, sometimes didn't. But they're often just posts or little plaques discreetly hidden on like little pathways, or like a country house or a little fishing area. And always just following this little acorn, sort of trusting that it would take me in the right direction. And then my final kind of miles was in the wood, and there were squirrels bounding everywhere. And I'm like, oh, this is hilarious. But yeah, I got to the finish line, again, my imaginary finish line, and... met my mum there, and she was my cheer squad. The funny thing was, I passed and these four guys were there, and they sort of asked, you know, where have I come from, and just described briefly what I'd done, and they were really sweet. They were very in awe, and so they became my rent crowd. So that was nice. One of them bought me a pint of cider.
And, that's so sweet.
It was really lovely, actually.
Kindness of strangers.
Exactly, and those little moments that just sort of typified the whole sort of journey, really.
Oh, that's so amazing. And I guess crossing the actual finish line, I know it was imaginary, but it was there.
Yeah.
Was it the same as you described earlier, sort of sadness, happiness, achievement? Was it overwhelming, or was it just was it an anticlimax, actually? Because people experience things.
I don't think
in
it was
ways.
An anticlimax, but I don't think I was overwhelmed with emotion.
Yeah.
I think I felt very, I don't think it's hit me yet.
Yeah,
I think
probably.
I'm still yet to, when I sit down and I start writing about it, I've done a bit of writing already, and that's when I kind of tend to become a bit gushy.
Yeah.
So, even talking about it, I'm surprised I haven't cried.
No, I think, well, I'd be crying with
still,
you.
So yeah, no, it's still there to bubble to the surface, I think. But I think hearing everyone say congratulations and what an achievement and well done has been a really nice thing for me to try and let it sink in, because I still don't feel that I've
but I also think that, and I do think that does really help actually in terms of realizing that you have done something that's what you have done is absolutely amazing. But it is your normality. It becomes your normality because you're doing it over those days. And so you finish and you're like, oh, yeah, great. That was really hard and I've come through it. And actually, in terms of what you're saying, you know, I think the achievement, all the more achievement for having gone through those really tough times when actually the easiest thing to do is quit. So just the perseverance to get through it, I think it's just phenomenal and really inspiring, actually.
I think it was the thought of having to stop that made me cry.
Yeah.
It's true.
I can completely understand. Yeah. But I suppose one extra point that I wanted to touch on was nutrition.
Oh, yeah.
Which I forgot to mention, because you can't really get through something like this without fuel. So I'd just be really interested to know how you fueled your body.
I mean, let's just kind of keep it to during the event. I was I ate pretty normally in the sense that didn't kind of feel that I had to have a sudden burst of carbs or like fuel bars or anything like that. I mean, I had a really good breakfast. I'd have sort of scrambled eggs and rye bread, avocado for breakfast, and
loads,
like first thing in the morning when I wake up. And I mean, I don't ever struggle to eat breakfast. I love breakfast. So and then mid-morning I'd prepare myself an oat bake with sort of blueberries, bananas and an egg, so bake it in the oven, which is really nice actually. So I'd kind of chop that up, or actually mum would give me a hand in the morning when I was running around or foam rolling. and so I'd have that kind of mid-morning to make sure that was a nice thing to look forward to. Lunch was sort of pasta salads or sweet potato. I had quite a bit of sweet potato.
Yeah.
Like random bits.
So slow release.
Yeah, either sort of tuna or crayfish or salmon or something like that. Sounds a bit like elaborate, but it's just something
sounds
that was
very nice.
I didn't want to eat any meat, really. So it was sort of, yeah. But it just kind of went like that. It was pretty simple stuff.
But whole foods, essentially.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, like so really kind of real basic. Food. Like obviously nothing processed, nothing crappy. And as much as I said, definitely had bits of cake here and there, I didn't try to kind of go too wild on the sugar or the chocolate, because I think every now and again you sort of have it, but it can cause the energy dips quite quickly. So I just try to keep it as normal and wholesome as possible, as you say.
No, but I think that's really helpful, because I think, you know, when you think of running, you think of gels, you think of special bars, and those kind of quick energy hits, which obviously for kind of more speed
events
are really, well, not necessary, because people do fuel themselves in different ways, but most people do fuel themselves like that, I think. But when you're going long endurance, I think, and you really need to make sure that your body gets that nutrition, don't you?
Pre and post supplements were quite crucial as well. I had some BCAA powder, which is branched chain amino acids, which are really great for muscle and just making sure your muscles are repairing and intact. It's effectively like what you need to kind of the muscles to rebuild. So that was just a sort of a supplement, like as a thing when I take at the end of every day and beforehand. So that was good too.
That's probably a good point for people in heavy training.
BCAAs are really, really useful.
Cool. So I went back to technical stuff. So if we go back to just amazingness of the whole challenge and just how fantastic it is, I think it would just be really interesting to know, and this is a bit of problems, I find it a bit of a tough question, but did you learn anything about yourself that you didn't already know? Or did it reinforce things that you already knew about yourself? Because it's definitely a journey in itself over that period of time, those 12 days.
It's really, I guess it's just what you... I had so much focus that I just loved putting all my energy into this as a challenge. Like, I just really loved it, and the different aspects of it as well, creatively. And I mean, I did on the first day, I met this incredible guy called Martin Dory, who does the 2-minute beach clean. It started up this movement of the environmental angle, but I mean, I think we can talk about that another time. But it's that was great to have that angle as well, because so much of what I was doing just gave it a different layer, a bit more depth, and again sort of looking at nature and the environment and what we're doing. So I'd go around and try to, I mean, it didn't end up being daily, but I think I did about 8 or 9 beach cleans, just sort of I ended up being more like 5 minutes, just whipping around, grabbing what I could see. So a lot of plastic, a lot of kind of crap that ends up on our beaches, and turn them into little pictures.
Yeah, I love them.
Yeah. Which I just really love, and I think that's it, is just finding a creative outlet for something. So that was probably, it's the nicest thing I've kind of done with all of this, is just to pull all these different strands together. Again, I think it was my celebrating my strengths, hopefully, personally, and it was very personal to me. And so if it would inspire someone else to go and do a similar thing that is personal to them, that would be amazing, because I think it's just about pushing yourself and thinking a bit more, just thinking big, really.
Yeah, exactly. And actually that brings me on to probably the last sort of point, is what advice would you give to somebody who has this idea but it's just, or maybe doesn't have this idea but thinks that they need to do something but kind of feels hindered, I suppose.
Yeah.
What kind of advice would you give?
I think it's, you need to give yourself space to explore different options of what kind of thing you think represents you.
Yeah.
And I think so much of the time what we do is governed by what we think we should do. And this, I've touched on my writing before, this should is quite a destructive word. So to try and kind of get rid of perceptions of, you know, what other people think, and just go with what feels right and what you really love. And so, like I said, I think through this whole my personal training journey and this challenge, I'm looking now, I'm super excited to, I mean, as I say, got back in the gym this morning, conversations about where it's going from there, and just moving. So I've really, for me, what I've learned, and kind of would advise anyone else, if you love being physical and moving, just find a way to keep going, incorporating into a make it a lifestyle rather than a fad phase in your life.
I think it's just amazing. I personally feel really inspired and thinking about my next thing. So thank you so much.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Absolute pleasure. So to find, do you want to go through kind of how to find you on social media?
Sure, absolutely. I mean, my website is www.foodmoodmove,
with a really great blog as well.
Getting there, lots of work to do, but and the handle for Twitter and Instagram is foodmoodmove as well. So it's a little bit of an idea of it's moving towards more of fitness and well-being for the daily adventurer, I think, is probably where we're going towards with that. So yeah, hopefully soon.
Super excited. Well, it's been really amazing to watch this kind of journey over the last year, and I think you've made some incredibly brave decisions that are genuine. I know the word inspiring is used a lot, but I think genuinely are inspiring, and it is about kind of pushing those limits and stepping outside of comfort zones. And I know sort of the tagline for this whole podcast is, you know, be greater than you think possible. And I think that's it. It's kind of going beyond what you... I know you have to believe that you can do it, but you're just not sure that you can do it. And it's scary but exciting at the same time.
Getting to that start line.
Yeah, exactly, which is often the biggest challenge. Yeah. So thank you so much for your time.
Thanks,
and really look forward to following the rest of the journey.
Yep.
Enjoyed learning about Emily's journey and adventures, and I hope you agree with me also that she really does embody living beyond. Thank you so much for listening. Please don't hesitate to look at the livebeyond.co website. There is an episode page on there that has more information on Emily herself, as well as the different things that she spoke about. The new podcast will be up in the next couple of weeks. Again, thanks so much for listening. Bye.